are listening to the PEDS Therapy Collective, where parents, clinicians, and practitioners of all kinds come together to share and grow from an interdisciplinary perspective. So today's episode is a really special episode because I am using it to practice my delivery of a class that I'm teaching called Emotions in Action. Emotions in Action was originally thought of after the most recent school shooting in Centennial, Colorado, back in May of this year. And during that shooting, the boy who died, one of the boys who died, his name was Kendrick. He jumped in front of the shooter and ended up saving somebody else's life, but sacrificed his own. And when I saw him on the news, the pictures of him, and heard what he had done, all I could think about was what my children would do in a situation like that. And my oldest right now is 11. And all I could think about was my oldest choosing to sacrifice himself to save somebody else. And I did not know exactly what I could do or what could be done, but I thought of this class as a way to help build emotional awareness and help improve resiliency in our children and help build connections for our children, because I think that that is what the long-term solution is to this problem. In the short term, we can definitely bar the doors, have our children wear bulletproof backpacks, get more security guards at the school. I will never support arming our teachers. I don't think that that has any place in the schools. But there's a myriad of things that they are looking to do to prevent or deter a shooting at the moment. And I wanted to take a more global view and try to help curb bullying, curb school violence at its core, building connections, helping children be able to talk about their emotions and feel comfortable talking with our emotions. So that's where Emotions in Action came from. And it really does lend itself well to me as a physical therapist talking about it, because we learn through our senses and our movements are part of the emotions that we feel are through our body, things that we like, things that we don't like. We gain that through movement. We gain that through touch. I am an infant and child massage instructor, so I know how important deep touch is. And I felt that I could put together this class. So in a minute, I'm going to teach the class. And I have it in two parts. And, you know, if you are a parent, feel free to have your child listen along with you. This particular session here that I'm talking is directed toward the children. I think ideally kids who are at least 7 years old on up could definitely benefit, probably 7 to 14 or so, just with the language that I'm using and the how deep we're getting into the information. But all right, so here we go. Hello, everybody. Today in class, we're going to talk about our emotions. To get started, I just want to let you know a little bit about why we're here in the class and who I am. So we're going to quickly go through those four WH questions that your teacher asks in school all the time. So who am I? I'm Christine. I am a mom of three children. I'm also a physical therapist. work with kids. So every day I go and I work with children who are having difficulties or who are unable to do something with their body or want something to get easier for them. And we work on these hard things a couple of times a week or once a week so that they can learn how to do whatever they can't do right now. And there's a variety of reasons why they can't do it right now, but I help them and I help their parents work through those challenges to help them meet their goals. So as I was working with kids, I began to see very quickly that it's not just physical what they're being challenged with. A lot of this brings up emotions too, and how well the children are able to handle the emotions often played a part in how well they were able to accomplish their physical goals too. So that got me thinking that if these kids that I work with have that challenge, then probably everybody else has these challenges too. In fact, when I was growing up, I dealt with a lot of emotional challenges myself. So I don't have any formal diagnosis, or the doctor didn't put me on any medication for anything, but in school I had a really hard time understanding that it was okay not to get an A in class. It was so difficult for me to kind of understand that getting less than A didn't mean that I was a failure. I really internalized all of that as a child, and it came out as crying. So people just thought that I was a perfectionist. Does anybody here know what a perfectionist is? Or feel like they might be one? Well, that means that you want to do everything perfect all of the time, and you get very upset if you don't do it perfectly, and you're going to keep working at it until you do it perfectly because you want it to be perfect. But that wasn't what was going on with me. I didn't want it to be perfect for the sake of being perfect. I wanted the best grade because I feared, or I was afraid, that if I did a bad job, that meant that I was a bad person. That's something very different. So I was shaming my own self. I had a false belief, or I was thinking something incorrectly, but nobody helped me understand that. And so I never got better. In fact, because I avoided the feelings of kind of dealing with that anxiety or that nervousness of what's going to happen if I get a bad grade, I really never got better at it. Because we know that when we have something that's hard to do, getting better requires practice and successful practice. And we're going to talk all about that today, because all of this has to do with how we name our emotions, feel our emotions, and then have a thought and an action based on those emotions. And by the end of today, I really hope that at the very least you understand how you can begin this process at home or at school or with your friends, because you guys right now are 10, 11, 12 years old and just starting to understand how all of this fits together. And you guys are doing the best you have with the information that you know. And some people have an easier time than others. But bottom line is that all of us have to work through difficult emotions. Every single one of us. We as children, your parents, your teachers, people that you meet in the community, your friends, everybody has to deal with emotions. And like I said, some of us deal with them more easily than others. And I want to give you guys the tools that you can use to help make this process easier. Because a lot of these emotions that we're going to talk about today in class are difficult or uncomfortable to feel. It doesn't give our bodies a good feeling to feel frustrated or to feel nervous or to feel sad or angry or mad or even feeling really excited, but so excited that we feel almost out of control. So whatever big emotions that you're dealing with or you're feeling like they're too much to handle, those are the ones that we need the most practice with. Because if we can get better at feeling and working through those emotions, we'll get better at feeling and working through all of the emotions. And I want you guys to know something. I love every single one of you. I care about every single one of you so much that I'm here today talking with you. Because I know that you guys are all going to grow up one day and be adults. And maybe some of you will be parents too and have your own kids who are going to be going through these emotions. Or maybe you're going to be in a job that doesn't feel good to you or that makes you feel nervous, but you really want to do that job. So you need these tools, not only now as kids, to help talk with your parents, work with your teachers, have friends, and feel successful, but you're going to need this later in life too. All the information that I'm going to tell you today, I have learned through personal experience, but I've also learned by reading books, listening to people talk, in different lectures. And you know what? All those lectures and books are written for adults. Adults buy those books because they don't understand this information either. And I don't want you to have to wait 25 years, 30 years from now to start to think about how your emotions impact your thoughts and your actions. We can begin thinking about that right now. Are you going to walk out of here knowing all the answers? No, of course not. But the more we start practicing and understanding what these emotions feel like and how we can create some space, create some time between our thoughts in our action, we're going to get better practice and we're going to get better at it. So that's why, who I am and why I'm here. And I spoke about it. Where are we going to use these skills? We're going to use these skills at home with our families. We're going to use them at school with our teachers. And we're going to use them with our friends. And all of our friends are also kind of at different levels. And so the biggest thing I also want you to think about today is we want to use kindness whenever possible. I want to just start off with a feeling and a thought that everybody is doing the best that they can. And I want to treat people how I want to be treated. And so today in class, I'll ask you please to do the same. That you listen first. If you want to ask a question, please raise your hand. I'll answer everybody's questions or I'll let everybody speak, but we just need to do it one at a time. If you need to get up to use the bathroom, everybody can do that also one at a time. So please ask me first and then I'll let you go one person at a time. And of course, we want to be respectful of other people's thoughts, creative ideas. So if somebody has an idea that you don't agree with, we can say that you don't agree. But let's be kind. So no name calling or saying that that's dumb or that's a stupid idea. Because no idea is stupid. And sometimes we just need to kind of talk through the idea a little bit more to get to a more clear answer. All right. So let's go ahead and then begin with our next part. So now we're going to talk about emotions. So who can tell me some emotions? We have emotions like happy, sad, tired, excited, embarrassed, proud, scared. What else? Silly, annoyed. So those are all different emotions. And included in your booklet, you have an emotions wheel. Has anybody ever seen one of these before? This is a really useful tool to have. So on this wheel, we have lots of different colors and a lot of words. And in the center, there's some pictures. So if you aren't able to read the words, you can just kind of focus on the little pictures of the man's face to kind of get an idea of which emotion means what. And the wheel is kind of divided into two halves. One half of the wheel has names of emotions that mean our needs are being met, that things are going in a direction that's moving us forward towards something, and we feel safe, we feel secure. And then the other side of the wheel has emotions that indicate that our needs are not being met, that something is off. And that's usually where we have those big uncomfortable emotions, where we usually have a greater chance of acting out in a way that doesn't help us move toward our goal, that doesn't help us move forward toward what we want. So I'll give you an example. Melanie, do you mind if I use you as an example? Because really, you know, some of the things that you go through are things that everybody here has gone through too. So let's think about a time when you really wanted something from me and that you couldn't have it. Like when you wanted to have hot lunch, but we couldn't have hot lunch that day. That might have made you feel frustrated, annoyed, and if you just acted out on that, you might have stomped your feet or might have thrown something at me because you were frustrated or mad that you couldn't get hot lunch. So that's, I said something to you, you felt mad, your reaction was to throw your stuffed animal at me. Well, that's not a helpful reaction, because even though the feeling of mad is okay, it's not okay to throw things, right? So what can we do to help us slow down a little bit and use more of our thinking brain, or sometimes they talk in school about our wizard brain, to come up with a solution so that we don't throw? We have to take a little bit more time. And we'll get into this a little bit after our activity here, but we need to create some space while we're feeling this emotion. So we want to think about the emotion a little bit more, what we're feeling, before we act. Okay? But before we get to that part, I just want us to really get good at naming these emotions. So take a few minutes here to look at this feelings wheel and look at all of these emotions. And there's probably even more than what's on this wheel, but here's a lot to get us started. In the center of the wheel, you see six main emotions, and then they get broken up into smaller, more specific emotions, and even one more layer or tier out from there, and to get into a lot of specific feelings to really help describe how we're feeling. And so we're going to play a little game here where I'm going to put an emotion label on your back, and you're going to be with a partner, and your partner is going to look at that emotion that's on your back, and they're going to try to act out for you. So you have to guess the name of the emotion that's on your back, and then you'll look at your partner's back, and he'll have an emotion written on his back, and you'll have to try to act it out for him. So we don't want to actually say the name of the emotion that is on the back. We're just going to act it out. Okay. Any questions about that? So I'm going to go ahead and put the names of the emotions on everybody's back. And in the regular class, the first set of emotions that we have on each other's backs are good and bad. So if we're just looking at good, bad, we might also have the word okay, fine, not fine. It's going to be really hard, actually, to guess those words because they're not very descriptive and they don't really help us know how to help the other person or what that other person might need. So if I just say to you, how are you doing today? And you tell me you're good, I guess that's okay. Hopefully you're doing good with those emotions. You're handling those emotions well. Your day is probably going okay for you, but I don't really know exactly how you're feeling. And the same thing is true if you say that I'm not doing okay. Well, if I'm a friend of yours and I want to try to help either listen to what's going on or be able to help you work through that problem, or if I'm your mom or dad and I want to help kind of walk with you through that emotion, I'm going to need to know a little bit more information. But perhaps you don't know the name of what to call your emotion. That's where we can use our emotion wheel to help us figure out exactly what emotion are we feeling right now, because it's hard to help somebody when you're not sure how they're feeling. So if I say I'm not okay, that could mean all of these emotions on this side of the emotion wheel, the emotions where my needs aren't being met. But I really am not helping myself understand the emotion very well because I haven't named it specifically. So then if we can think about an emotion on that first tier or second tier, we are able to act that one out a little bit more easily. So let's try acting out anger. Compared to acting out joy. We can try acting out being scared. What about acting out frustration? So all of those different emotions had different actions or body positions. And as we're going to talk about in a minute, they even had different parts in our bodies where we felt those emotions. So that's what we're going to talk about next. We're going to talk about where in our body did we feel those emotions. In this part, we're going to be talking about the body of emotions. So there's a handout in your packet that has a hand-drawn little person, and then there are some words at the bottom of the page. So what you want to do right now is find that handout, and as I'm talking, if you want to go ahead and cut out all of those words, that would be fine to do. So what we're going to think about here is, where exactly in your body do you feel some of these emotions? So let's start with some really big emotions, like feeling excited. Feeling excited can absolutely be a big emotion. When you're very excited because it's your birthday and you can't wait because you're going to get a present, or if you're going on vacation and you're so excited about that, you just can't wait. The day goes by slowly the day before. You can't sleep. You wake up in the morning and you can't eat anything. Where do you feel that in your body, that level of excitement? So you can cut that word out and paste it on the body where you feel it, or you can just draw the letter E or write the word excited, wherever you feel that. What about when you feel sad? Where do you feel sadness? You might feel sadness. For me, I cry very easily when I'm sad, and so you might feel it in your eyes, you might feel a headache, you might feel a pain in your neck. Where do you feel sadness? What about feeling nervous? If you're nervous about doing something, or you're feeling like you have little butterflies in your stomach, or you're feeling uneasy someplace in your body, it feels maybe your legs are wobbly, or you might feel like your palms are sweaty. So for you, where do you feel nervous? Where in your body, I don't think this is on the paper, but where in your body do you feel pride? When you do something that you worked really hard at and you finally accomplished your goal, where do you feel a sense of pride? Maybe you feel it like a lightness in your chest, or you feel a sensation in your upper back of very kind of stiff or proud. Oops. So where in your body do you feel pride? What about fear? Where in your body do you feel afraid? So after you get all of those emotions cut out and you think about where you feel each of them, you definitely want to glue them onto the paper and keep that. You can hang it up in your room, because the next time you have an emotion, it's another good way for you to check in with yourself to see exactly what is going on. Because you might not be able to identify it first on the feeling wheel. You might first feel it in your body. And the more we listen to our bodies, the easier it will get to name an emotion on the feeling wheel. Thank you. we're going to talk about is just how much of any given emotion you can handle, or how much can you tolerate. So if you imagine a big cup of water and you fill it all the way up to the top, that would be like your full capacity. But what if you had that same cup of water, the same size, but you can't even manage to keep the water in the cup, even if you only had a little bit in there? Or maybe you can tolerate or handle having halfway full and you can still manage the water well. So that's what I want you to think about with each of these emotions. How much happiness can you have in your life before it's too much for you? Or how much sadness in your life can you handle before it's too much? Do you allow that emotion into your life? Or do you try to avoid it? So I've had people in the past who have answered this looking at the afraid column, and they really feel like they have no tolerance for feeling afraid. That as soon as they start to feel afraid, they want that emotion gone. So let's just take a few minutes here and look at this handout and look at all the emotions, and you can kind of draw or color in that column up to the top if you can handle a lot of that emotion, if you have a high tolerance for that emotion, or color it in halfway if you can handle it, you know, somewhat, or maybe you don't add any color to that column. Let's take a few minutes and see how much of each emotion you are able to tolerate. And this is important to understand, because if you aren't able to tolerate an emotion, you're going to want to avoid it. And if we avoid something, we don't ever give ourselves a chance to get better at feeling it. And what the research has shown is that not only do you start to decrease your ability to feel that one emotion, but over time, you lose the ability to get that cup full for any emotion. So right now, looking at this, if you have happy or excited in filled up in your column, I think that's great. What I challenge you to do is be able to build up a tolerance for all of these emotions as much as you can. They may not all be at 100% for you up to the very top of each column, but just like that water in that cup, I want you to be able to manage your emotions even when your cup is full of it. So even when you are feeling anger at the most, the top level, I still want you to be able to have control over yourself and keep that water inside the cup, as opposed to somebody who maybe can't handle feeling that emotion and they are sloshing that water all around, even if there's just a little bit in there. Or somebody who completely pours out the water because they don't want to feel it at all. How much can you handle in any of these emotions? And even if right now you have columns that have less of a tolerance than another, hopefully by the end of today, you'll have some tools to really help you grow your capacity for these emotions, or allow you to be okay feeling more of these emotions. Talk about our senses. So So how many senses do you think we have? Most people would say 5, but I'm going to actually tell you that we have 10 senses. So you know the 5 that we learn about in school: touch, taste, sight, sound, or hearing, and taste. But then we have 5 more. So we have a proprioceptive sense, and that is our sense of pressure in our joints and in our muscles. And that's different than touch, because it's how we know how hard to hold a pencil, or how hard I know how to jump on a trampoline versus jump on a hard surface. So how much pressure is needed to accomplish a specific task is all about proprioception. And then another sense we have is called the vestibular sense. And the vestibular sense definitely helps us out with through touch. It helps us know where we are in space without using our eyes, without using the sense of touch. So vestibular sense goes right along with hearing too, because our vestibular system is housed inside our inner ear. And when we turn our head, there's fluid inside our inner ear that passes over these hair cells that tells our brain where we are in space without needing to use our eyes. So this is super important for people who have jobs or hobbies that they can't use their eyes for, so such as a gymnast or even an airplane pilot. They have strong vestibular skills and senses because they've honed that sense. Someone who is blind has heightened vestibular senses as well. So we have those 2 more, so that's 7. Plus we have how the sense of what's going on inside of our body, and that's called interoception. And from a basic standpoint, that's how you know that you need to use the bathroom, or how you know you're hungry, or even being able to sense your heart beating faster. That's all interoception. And there's a lot of other ones too that we can have the capacity to feel and to sense what's happening on the inside. And again, that's different than touch, because touch is going to be with our fingers or on our skin. This interoception is something very different, but similar. And then we also have an interpersonal sense, so that energy or sense I get from another person, and that doesn't always mean that they're there in the room with me. I can get a sense or a feeling from another person without them being there present with me. But if you meet somebody new and you get that first impression, you are picking up on their energy. And some of us have better sense, interpersonal sense, than others as far as our ability to accurately sense what is going on. Lastly, we have our sense of intuition. And this is a very important sense and often ignored, but it gives us information about our environment just like the other 9 senses do. And that's exactly what our senses are for, is to help us learn about our environment, learn if something is safe or if there's danger. And alongside the senses, our body has a very specialized system to help protect us in the face of danger. You can think of something as simple as touching a hot pan. It doesn't take much more than a millisecond for you to pull your finger or pull your hand away from that hot pan if you accidentally touched it. You didn't have to stop and think, this pan is hot, I should pull my hand away. It is something that automatically happens. In fact, it happens without any thought. So that is a reflex, and there are lots of different reflexes in our body, and they are meant to be protective. If you were to accidentally crossed the street without looking and a car was coming toward you, as soon as your body sensed that danger, you would react. Again, no time to think. We're wired that way so that we can protect ourselves in the face of danger. So our senses, using our senses, can help us learn if the environment we are in is safe or not safe. Right now, let's take the time to do a little activity. So I'm going to ask you to go to your kitchen or to your cupboard, pantry, and find something small, something about the size of a raisin. If you don't have any raisins, maybe you have a small piece of candy like an M&M or a Skittle. If you don't have that, maybe you have a little Goldfish cracker or even a small, you can kind of break off a piece of bread or break off a cracker. So we're looking for something small about the size of a raisin. And when you get your item, go ahead and press play again and we'll get started. So the first thing I will say is I'm going to challenge you that you're going to take a whole minute. Let's see if you can take a whole minute to eat whatever food item you have here in front of you. Okay, so we'll start the timer here in 1 second once I get it going. I'm going to start the timer right now. So before you put it in your mouth, I want you just to hold it in your hand and feel it for me. How does it feel? Is it hard? Is it soft? Is it slimy, wet, dry? Next, I want you to go ahead and smell it. Does this have any sort of smell? Does the smell remind you of anything? Does it remind you of some place that you've been before or a food that you've eaten before? Is it a smell that you like? Maybe you can't sense any smell at all. The next thing I'll have you do is look at it with your eyes. Is it something that looks appealing to you? That when you see that food, you think, that's going to be good. Or is it something that you don't like? Now I'll have you go ahead and lick it. Just with the tip of your tongue, go ahead and lick that. You guys are doing great so far. Actually, that's already been 1 minute. Lick that and think about what that flavor tastes like to you. Something that you like, you don't like that flavor, maybe it doesn't have much of a flavor. Is the smell stronger than the flavor, or is the flavor stronger than the smell? Now go ahead and take the smallest bite that you can take from that. Was it easy to bite into? Was it crunchy, soft? You're doing great so far. We're at a whole minute and 50 seconds for eating this. What does that feel like in your mouth? Go ahead and take another bite and you can continue to finish the rest of that. That was 2 minutes and 5 seconds that you spent eating that tiny little piece of food the size of a raisin. So congratulations for taking the time to stop and use as many senses as you could. We didn't use all of them, but we used those main five to help you get an idea of what that food is, kind of being more present, being more aware of what's going on with that food as you're eating. And obviously we can't eat an entire meal that way, but we definitely could find a happy medium between shoveling the food in our face and talking with our mouth full and not being able to even enjoy what we're eating because we're going so fast, versus taking our time to really savor and enjoy each bite of food. So thanks for playing that game with me, and I challenge you to do that even for one of your bites every day. Increase your awareness of what you're eating and the enjoyment of food, because we want to enjoy what we're eating. It's not just nutrition. There's definitely a social component to food, and there's so many senses involved with eating. We can really enjoy that. And the same thing would be for you if you don't like a particular food. If something you don't like, you might do better at trying to experiment with that food, perhaps if you can cut out one of those senses. Maybe there's one of those senses that we just did that was bothersome. Perhaps it was the texture. So we can change the way it feels in our mouth by cooking it, or by breading it in something, or dipping it in something else. We could change the flavor. Again, if we maybe mix that food with something else, or prepare it a different way. So if you are somebody who doesn't like a food, maybe it's you don't like the way it looks, and you've never had that food before, but you just don't like the way it looks. Well, we can work with our moms and our dads and our parents or caregivers to help us figure out a way to take that sense that we don't really enjoy, that's giving us a not so nice feeling, one of those uncomfortable feelings, and see if we can change that so that we can start to practice enjoying that food. Because food's important, and so much nutrition can come out of foods to help us with our healthy bodies and growing. So we really want to be able to eat as much and as a variety of foods as possible, especially including fruits and vegetables. And a lot of those can seem scary at first, but if we can kind of figure out which one of our senses isn't making us feel good when we have that food, that might be a way to help us build up a tolerance or be able to start to find some enjoyment in that food. Now we're going to talk about having to do something and wanting to do something. So throughout our day, at home, with our parents, at school, with our teachers, even with our friends, there are things that we want to do, and then there are things that we have to do. And sometimes they're the same, but sometimes they're not. So think to yourself about an example of when you want to do something, and really you're super excited about doing something. So that might be watching a TV program, or eating a special dessert or a special meal, or playing outside with your friends, or getting to go to the store to buy something special. So what's something that you want to do? If you have a piece of paper or you have your share journal handy, why don't you go ahead and write this down on one page. So we're going to have two pages, one for the things that we want to do and one for the things that we have to do. So let's take a few minutes to write down or draw a picture of all the things that we want to do. We've already talked about a couple of them: playing with our friends, watching a movie or a program, riding our bikes, eating ice cream. Let's see, what other things do we want to do? Some people may want to read a book. Some people may want to draw. I've had some people who have said they would like a snow cone machine, or they would like a guinea pig. That's something that they want. So you can be creative and start making that list of what you'd like to do, or what's something that you want. Go ahead and pause the recording here, and you can complete your list and then come back and press play when you're finished. So now on the second piece of paper, we're going to make a list again. And again, you can draw a picture of all the things that we have to do, like clean our room, do our homework, walk the dog, clean the dishes, take out the trash. So make a whole list of all the things that you have to do and really don't want to do them. Again, you can pause the recording here and press play again when you're finished with your list. So now you have two lists. You have one list of things that you want to do, and you have a list of things that you have to do. So it's easy to get the things done on your list that you want to do because, well, you want to do them. So that's not going to take much effort at all. Yeah, it's super easy to go outside and play with your friends because you are motivated. You have a lot of desire to do that. No one's going to have to tell you twice to go and play with your friends or go and watch TV, because that's something that you want to do. But what about the things on the other side of the list, the I have to do? How many times does your mom, your parents, people that you live with have to tell you to do any of those things on that list? Pick up your clothes off the floor, make sure you put your towel back after you wash, dry your hands, make your bed. How many times do people have to remind you to do those things? And why do you think that is? Does that make you feel frustrated or upset that somebody has to tell you those things? Do you maybe even feel like you wish that person wouldn't have to tell you that so many times, or you wish that they stopped telling you that so many times? Well, part of the reason why you don't like to hear that is because it's something that you are thinking about as a have to. And if I can help you think about it differently and we could make it into a want to, I don't think your mom or your grandma or grandpa or aunts and uncle or your teacher would have to nag you anymore. I really think if we can turn those have to's into want to's and you were motivated to get it done because that was something that you felt was important, nobody would have to nag you anymore. So does anybody have any ideas about how we could help change those have to's into want to's? So if you're sitting there with your mom or a parent, go ahead and talk that through and think about some of the things that you could do to help change those have to's into want to's. If you need to, you can pause the recording. In the classes that I've taught in the past, some of the kids have thought of some really great ideas and ways to help change the have to's into want to's. And one of the things somebody said was that they like to make it into a game. So that's helpful. So if you're needing to clean your room every day before you go outside and play, you could turn it into a game. You could set a timer and see how fast you could clean up. Another way would be to use your imagination and pretend that you are on a secret mission. Then you're on a secret mission to find something in your room. And when you find the secret mission, you get the reward, the treasure of getting to go outside and play. So you can do it that way. You could ask for some sort of small reward from your mom. Maybe that might be a hug. that, Mom, if I can clean up my room in 5 minutes, can I get an extra hug? Or, Mom, if I can clean up my room here, can I have one extra bite of dessert after dinner? Or you can ask for something that you're wanting. If you can turn it into something that you want to do, it'll be a lot easier to get that done. Other things would be to divide up the task. Sometimes it feels like that's a really big job and you're not sure exactly where to start. You could ask for help for learning where to start. So moms and dads and parents, we want you to do the work and we want you to have responsibility for your things. But sometimes you might need a little bit of help to know where to begin. And we can help you with that. That would be a great question to ask your mom, your dad, your parent, whomever you live with. Where can I start? Or could I have a list so I can follow a list? And then as you figure it out that, hey, this isn't too bad, I can do this, that's an internal reward. You are self-motivating. Because once you see that you can accomplish it, the next time you know that you're going to be able to do it, and then it's going to be easier to get started. So those are a couple of ways that you can change something that you have to do into a want to. And if you can look at each one of your have to lists, items, and each one of those things that your parent, your teacher has to ask you repeatedly to do, think of a strategy, think of a game plan. How are you going to change that have to into a want to? And if you can learn that, you're off to a great start because you will be able to have a lot more fun and you're going to get those jobs done so that you can really get to do the things that you want to do. Talk about one more thing today before we end this lesson, and then there'll be a part two that you can listen to if you want to learn a little bit more about difficult emotions. So in this last section, I just want to recap and kind of give an overview of everything we've talked about up until this point. So we're talking about first identifying and naming an emotion, because those emotions are what drives our actions. And so this is the whole sequence. So first we have a stimulus. First we have something that we experience from our environment. And we gain that experience and it comes into our bodies in one of those 10 ways. We use one of our 10 senses to figure out, just like a snake senses heat with its tongue, we can use our 10 senses to sense what's going on in our environment and whether we're safe or whether we're in danger. And if we're safe, that's good. If we're safe, we have some time to then feel that feeling, have an emotion, name that emotion that we're feeling. Have a thought, thinking about the thought, and then have a response. And all that whole process happens pretty quickly. The emotion part may only take about 60 seconds, definitely not more than 2 minutes for you to feel that emotion. And if you can kind of move through that difficult big emotion for the 60 seconds up to 2 minutes, you're going to be able to then feel better and be in that calm and alert state, ready to use your wizard brain so that you can have that thought and give a response or give an action that is going to help you feel safe, that's going to help you get your needs met. So let's think about an example here. So your brother or your sister pushes open the door to your room and you're mad. You're mad about that. And so immediate reaction, you might yell at them, get out. And then they're going to come in and start teasing you and start dancing around your room. So that didn't get you what you wanted. So let's slow that down a little bit. Instead of being reaction, using a reaction right away, a reaction to that stimulus of them barging in through our room, we're not in any danger. So we can think about that, okay, I feel mad. You can say that too. I feel mad that you came into my room. And have that thought that this is my room, I need you to get out. And then we can use a calm voice and please leave my room. Perhaps you could kindly walk them out, or perhaps you could even ask, what do you need? They came into your room for a reason. You could ask them, how can I help you, in a kind voice. So if you use a kind voice, they'll probably use a kind voice back. So that second option of treating them with kindness and slowing down enough to think before you react can give a very different result versus the first one where you just start yelling. So that's how this works. If we can slow ourselves down to create a little bit of space, a little bit of time between our impulse and our action, we're going to be able to get things that we want a lot more of the time. So again, stimulus gives you a feeling. It's helpful if we can name that feeling. That leads to an emotion, that can lead to a thought, and then a response. We definitely want that process to go through. Unless we're in danger. If we're in danger and something is really unsafe, then of course we're going to go right to reaction because we need to protect ourselves. But the number of times that we find ourselves in real danger every day is very few, very few. And if we can develop more of an awareness about what's going on, we'll probably stay out of danger even more. So those are all things that we can definitely work on. Other things that we talked about today is like where we feel emotions in our body. So when you have a big emotion, go ahead and think about where you're feeling that so that you can start to connect that feeling in your body, that interoceptive sense of where you're feeling that, with the name of the emotion. Because usually it's in the same spot. You can use that feelings wheel also to help you label that emotion. And then we also talked about how much of an emotion we can handle. And it may be tough at first, but we really just need to move through about 60 seconds to 2 minutes of an emotion before that feeling is going to slow down in our body. So during that time, we can do some slow breathing, and I'll teach you a breathing technique here. Let's start with the shh breath. So you're gonna hold your finger up to your mouth like you're telling someone to be quiet, and take a breath in, and then shh. And you'll exhale out the air until there's no more air left, and breathe in again. And we'll try one more. Breathe in. So that was just 3 breaths to help us kind of center ourselves. So if we're going to need to let that emotion run through our body for about 60 seconds to 2 minutes, we should plan on taking about 12 breaths or so to really allow that feeling to pass, and then we can start to think about it. So it's okay to feel mad, it's okay to feel sad, angry, frustrated. All of those feelings are just that, they're just feelings. They're not good, they're not bad. We need to move through that feeling to be able to use that wizard brain to help us choose a response that is safe for us and safe for our friends and our family. And it's going to help us get what we want, as opposed to being reactive. And that often leads to bigger problems and having to deal with the emotion all over again. So thanks so much for joining me. At our next talk, we'll go into a little bit more about doing hard things and overcoming challenges. And we'll talk more about some other strategies to help you cope with some of these emotions and move through these emotions. Hi, it's Christine from the PEDS Therapy Collective podcast, as well as the Healthcare Advocacy podcast. And today I wanted to tell you about a volunteer organization that I helped co-found with Kristen Parsons. It's called Nightlight Inpatient Parent Support, and it's a free hotline for parents when they're in the hospital to reach out to another mom or dad who has been there before. So being in the hospital with your kid can be a very lonely and scary place, even if you're just there for a few days. And yes, there is support staff in the hospital, social workers, pastors, chaplains, but another parent to vent to, another parent to just talk about where the best coffee shop is or what are they going to do now, just to get some of those feelings and thoughts out of their head and into a space that's safe for them was something that was missing. And I know that the hospitals themselves can't provide it because of all of the privacy regulations. So that's why Kristen and I made this group. So what we need from you is word of mouth, getting this out to parents, families, hospitals. Right now this is starting in Denver, but we really want this to be a nationwide program. We have about 10 volunteers right now who are waiting to get a phone call from somebody, and all it requires is the parent calls in, lets us know what's going on, and we get back to the parent within 24 hours. So it's a really simple process. We just need help getting the word out that we even exist. And the advertising that is on this podcast and the Healthcare Advocacy podcast will go directly to purchasing items for us to be able to distribute across the nation. So whether that is business cards or pamphlets or flyers, it will help us grow as an organization. So thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Please share it with your family and friends, and search for the Healthcare Advocacy podcast as well, because that is another great resource for you to learn about all aspects of healthcare advocacy. Thank you.